From KXJZ in Sacramento, I'm Jeffrey Callison. Not every radio station has 50,000 watts in billboard ads. We're checking out some of them. Pirate, low power, and cable radio broadcasters today on Insight. Meet the man behind a 300-watt offbeat country station recently shut down by the FCC. Also, a small folk music station in Georgetown, California, the eclectic KRBS in Oroville, and others. We'll also check in with a group that does low-power radio station barn raising. Its goal is to help spread community-based radio. First, the news. I'm Jeffrey Callison. One of my favourite recent insights was our September 6th show about small radio stations. It was a snapshot of the lively world of radio beyond the big commercial and public networks. Let's listen to it again. Enjoy. From KXJZ in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. The biggest audiences in radio are usually from mainstream commercial stations. Some public stations have large audiences too. But there's more to radio than Clear Channel, Intercom, and NPR. Today we'll check in with just some of the smaller stations in Northern California. Coming up, licensed low-power stations like folk station KFOK in the foothills community of Georgetown and eclectic broadcasters KRBS in Oroville and KDRT in Davis. Also, Sacramento's public access cable radio station, The Voice. We start with stations not licensed by the FCC. You might call them pirate radio. They don't necessarily use that word themselves. Let's start with a station that until recently broadcast country music in the Roseville area until the FCC came knocking. Jeff Scammon of Wild West Radio is in our studio. Jeff, welcome to Insight.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
Let's start with getting an idea of the kind of music that you play on Wild West Radio, because you are on the internet even though you're not broadcasting.
That's correct.
What kind of music?
Well, it's kind of a blend of folk music, alternative country, blues, bluegrass, and a little comedy thrown in too.
So alternative country?
Yes.
Okay. And we have a song that you do play lined up. What is it?
That's by Asleep at the Wheel called Bloodshot Eyes.
Now just because you're pretty, you think you're mighty wise. You tell me you love me, then roll those big brown eyes. Last week when I saw you, your eyes were turning black. Go find the guy who beat you up, ask him to take you back. Don't roll those bloodshot eyes at me. I can tell you've been out on a spree.
That's Bloodshot Eyes by Asleep at the Wheel. Jeff, why do you play this music? Are you not hearing it on quote-unquote regular radio?
I couldn't have put it any better myself. That's exactly why.
Have you ever heard this kind of music played much on regular radio?
Back in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a station out of Gilroy, California called KFAT, and they played this nice, wonderful, eclectic blend of music.
You started out by broadcasting on a 300-watt radio station.
That's right.
And whereabout was the transmitter?
It was located outside my home.
Yes.
In Roseville, uh-huh.
And had you asked the FCC about permits and so on?
No, we hadn't got to that.
Why not?
Well, in reviewing the application process and whatnot, it became very clear to me that they would have never issued a license for me in that area.
Why?
In their mind, the radio dial is already full, although I did careful research to make sure I wasn't going to interfere with anybody else's radio transmission, and I really wasn't, but the FCC just has a different take on that.
What was your frequency?
I was on 92.9.
Okay. And so how far away were you from licensed stations? I think there's one at 92.5, isn't there?
92, that's right.
And then 93.1.
And that was out of Modesto, uh-huh.
Okay, that's right, out of Modesto. So you thought you were in good standing. How long were you broadcasting without a license?
A little over a year.
Yeah. And then what happened?
I was doing a live broadcast in my studio and looked out the front window and saw a couple gentlemen outside of a black van taking pictures of the antenna on my roof.
Oh, dear. It's the government here to help you.
They left me a little notice on the front doors giving me 10 days to produce a license, or they recommended that I stop broadcasting, which is what I chose to do.
Did you take legal advice?
No.
No, I just decided to.
Followed my own good instincts, I think.
Were you at that time also broadcasting on the internet, so to speak?
No, that came after the fact.
Because you were shut down?
That's right. Once I was given the notice, I still kept broadcasting for a few more days, and I let the listeners know that if they wanted to see the Wild West Radio continue, you know, in a different incarnation, being broadcasting over the internet, they would need to send in donations to make that happen, and that happened. And in fact, that was my sole source of funding for getting the internet broadcast going.
Do you know what would have happened if you'd kept broadcasting?
The gentleman from the FCC would have come back to the door and knocked again, and eventually they would have a warrant, and they would have come in and asked me to stop. And then if I didn't stop again, they'd come back, and they can impose a $10,000 fine on you once you've been given notice for every violation thereafter that you don't comply. So it can get quite costly, and they can also confiscate your equipment, too, if you continue to operate in violation.
My guest is Jeff Scammon, the founder of Wild West Radio, a country station that recently broadcast in the Roseville area until the FCC showed up. It's now on the internet. Are you the sole person on Wild West Radio?
That's correct. Right now I am.
Has anyone else ever been a DJ?
No, it's just myself. But we're thinking about expanding the programming and allowing other people to come in and do some programming as well.
And how are you on the air 24 hours a day? Do you record all your shifts?
No, I have some automation software, and when I'm there in the studio, you'll hear me talk, and when I'm not, it'll run itself and put in station IDs and other type of things.
Any radio experience before this?
Yes. It's been maybe 15, 20 years ago down in the Bay Area. I used to work at a community station called KKUP in Cupertino.
How do you know anyone listens or cares?
Well, by the emails I get and by the support I got also from listeners sending in money to keep the whole project going.
Yeah. Also with us, joining us by phone, is Monkey, the founder of Pirate Cat Radio, which broadcasts in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Monkey, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Pirate Cat Radio. What do you do?
Well, Pirate Cat Radio has been broadcasting for 10 years now. I started it when I was 15 years old, and I've just been broadcasting in various cities throughout California. And now we're solely based out of San Francisco, but we also... I'm pretty sure are the only syndicated pirate radio station worldwide. We actually have another transmitter set up in Los Angeles that we feed via the internet. So you can hear us, everything you hear in San Francisco, simultaneously in Los Angeles.
But San Francisco is the only city where you can be heard over the air, is that right?
No, Los Angeles and San Francisco, both on 87.9 FM.
How many people can hear you in those two cities?
It's really hard to tell. Our assumption is based on every caller we receive, about 100 people are listening. And we receive between 10 and 20 phone calls in a given hour.
How do you stay ahead of the FCC?
We just really play polite games with them, essentially. I've had numerous run-ins with the FCC. I've received over 60 warnings from them saying to you have 10 days to get off the air or 15 days to prove that you have a license to broadcast. And I don't have the information on me since I'm on my cell phone, unfortunately. But on piratecatradio.com, we actually have the U.S. statute from 1972 that allows us to broadcast in time of war. So whenever the FCC comes to us and gives us a notice saying to prove why we have reason to broadcast, all I do is print out another copy of that statute and mail it to them, along with a notice and a letter explaining this is why we believe we're able to broadcast. And they haven't seemed to bother us very much, other than coming by every once in a while to see if we're interfering with anything. But I think I do a pretty good job of making sure that I don't have any RF harmonics and all my filters are in place and everything, so we're not bleeding over on any other emergency frequencies or any other radio stations.
Do you really believe that the federal law allows you to broadcast right now during the quote-unquote war on terror?
I really do, actually. It's the best thing that George Bush has done in his term in office is to declare the war on terror and make it so broad and undefined that we're essentially in a war that will never end. And as long as, you know, another president comes along and says the war on terror is over, we're able to broadcast. You know, as long as we're providing a public service and informing people about any emergencies that could be happening in the San Francisco or Los Angeles areas, we'll be broadcast.
Are your transmitters in fixed locations?
Yes, it is.
So what's to stop the FCC from going along and knocking them down?
Well, they have to get a warrant to really intervene first, but they haven't done that yet. And I've made very clear to them that my reasons for broadcasting, and I try not to hide from them. A lot of other micro-broadcasting stations that I've known in the past, they really see the FCC as a scary figure that they don't really want to deal with. But, you know, I really try to keep everything copacetic and stay on friendly terms with them and check in with them every once in a while and say, hey, you know, are we interfering with anything? Has there been any complaints? Things of that nature. And just make sure that everything's running all right.
Have other stations complained to you?
No, actually, no other station has complained to us.
Give us an idea of the kind of shows that you that you broadcast.
We have a very broad range of radio programs. Originally, we started off just playing music when it was myself, and I would go on and have my four-hour rants every night, seven nights a week. But now I have three DJs, and throughout the week, there are two-hour radio slots mainly, and you'll hear them between the hours of 2 p.m. and midnight. But different DJs will go in and play music, talk about politics. We have various comedy shows. You know, just some alternative lifestyle radio programs as well, such as Satanic Radio Hour, which is actually a two-hour program. They have to fix their name. Another interview show called Drinks with Tony, where we have Tony Duchesne is the host of the radio show, and he brings in people such as Gavin Newsom, Mayor of San Francisco. The author of L.A. Confidential, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head. More recently, he had the author of Fight Club and Choke on the Air, whose name I can't remember either right now.
Well, sounds interesting. Have you ever considered legalizing yourself, you know, going through the process with the FCC and getting a license?
I have, actually, and I've actually attempted to on several occasions. I filled out actually processed the application four times to get a construction permit for an FM license, all of which has never been replied to. So my last attempt, which was 3 years ago, I actually bypassed that and sent in a direct application for a broadcast license, along with a check for $20, which the FCC did cash. But I never heard back from them about my application as to whether it was approved or not. All I know is that they took my $20 and might have read the application.
On the phone is Monkey, founder of Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco. In our studio, Jeff Scammon, the founder of Wild West Radio, which was until recently broadcasting in the Roseville area. It's now on the Internet. Jeff and Monkey, how does this work financially? How do you pay the bills? Does it cost you money, Jeff?
Initially, the FM broadcasts, all the equipment and everything was all funded by me, myself, solely. As far as the FM, the Internet broadcast at wildwestradio.com, that's been funded by listeners. On the webpage, there's a button they can click to make a donation through PayPal. And it hasn't been a money-making venture for me, but I've received enough in donations to keep the station going and pay for the equipment.
And do you have a day job?
I do.
You do. So that obviously pays the domestic bills. Monkey, what about you? How does Pirate Cat Radio work financially?
Originally, I started all off from my own pocket as well, as the other guests did. But now all the DJs pitch in $25 a month, and that essentially keeps the station afloat. So it's just on a kind of self-donation business model of sorts. Aside from the DJs all donating $25 a month to keep the station running, we also have benefits every 2 months at least, just to kind of get us out in front of the public and also raise a little bit of money so we can buy a new digital hybrid telephone system as we did last week.
And finally, both of you, do you listen to regular radio? And if so, what kind of music or shows do you listen to, Jeff?
Mainly news talk if I listen to the radio.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I should also mention KVMR in Nevada City on Saturday afternoons. They've got Wesley Robertson and Thomas Greener that do a terrific show.
Fine station. And Monkey?
I primarily listen to NPR stations like KQED here in San Francisco. and college radio such as KUSF and KFJC.
Well, very good. Both these stations, there are links from our webpage, capradio.org/insight. In fact, there are links to every radio station you'll hear on our show today on that webpage. So I'll thank you both. On the phone, Monkey, the founder of Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco, and in our studio, Jeff Scammon, the founder of Wild West Radio. Thank you both.
My pleasure, Jeff.
Thank you much.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, licensed low-power radio stations and a national group that does barn raising to help new community stations get started. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Some of our most interesting shows and segments were produced by interns. You could help produce this show too if you make the Insight team. Learn about internships at capradio.org/insight. Today's topic, small radio stations. Earlier, we checked in on pirate stations. Now let's look at some licensed low-power stations. We'll start with KDRT. It's a 100-watt FM station in Davis. Station director Jeff Shaw is in our studio. Jeff, welcome to Insight.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Good to be here.
Is KDRT part of that relatively small wave of stations that were licensed, part of the low-power FM group?
Yes, we applied back in 2000, and that was when there was a five-day window to apply for California, along with five other states. And we were awarded our construction permit in 2003, and we went on the air September 24th, 2004.
Was there a pirate version of KDRT before the low power?
Sort of. It was a different group of people somewhat, but there was a station in Davis that operated with an unlicensed broadcaster, and he would he built his own transmitter that was in really high standards, and he would broadcast it actually when KDVS went off the air. It's called Davis Live Radio, and so he would broadcast when KDVS, a college station in Davis, went off the air, and it was very interesting radio. It's inspiring radio.
How do you mean? What were they doing?
They would go out on the street. It was back when cell phones were first sort of a novelty, and they would get live interaction with people downtown, and it was very lots of calls, and people would sort of an eclectic mix with interesting personalities.
There's a certain glamour in being a pirate radio station. Why was the decision made to formalize KDRT?
Well, it wasn't so much that it was the same group that decided to formalize KDRT. It was more just that the opportunity arose, and we decided to seize the opportunity to sort of reclaim the airwaves and give access to our community members to those airwaves.
Give us an idea of the kind of programs on KDRT.
We have about 40 programmers right now, we haven't even put out a call for proposals for more programs in a while. But we have Kids Planet, which is 8 to 10 year olds, who have interviewed scientists and the Sea Shepherd Foundation from as far away as Antarctica. We have a show called Access Davis that brings in mentally challenged folks, and they do a radio show. We have music shows. We have a teen talk. We have a high school beat. So we have a science show called The Inoculated Mind, which is a UC Davis scientist who comes on and talks about everything from beekeeping to mosquito spraying.
Yeah. Also with us, Bruce Hayden, founder and operator of KFOK. It's a low-power station in the Sierra Foothills community of Georgetown. Bruce Hayden was on our show a couple of weeks back because he was the organizer of the acoustic music camp, the American River Acoustic Music Camp. We had Joe Craven and Barbara Lamb in our studio. Bruce, welcome back to the program.
Well, it was nice to be back here.
KFOK was also licensed in that group of low-power stations, is that right?
Yes, we were licensed we applied in 2000, just as Jeff did, same window.
Was there a pirate version of KFOK before?
No, not at all.
Okay. There's folk music on KFOK, as its name implies, but you do have other kinds of programs too, don't you?
Yeah, we're pretty eclectic, actually. We run the gamut pretty much. We have ages from about 14 all the way up to 70 as far as broadcasters on the air. There is some public service programs as well.
We have a sample of the music on KFOK. Tell us what it is.
Oh, the one that's coming up. This is Sherry Austin. It's actually be a show that my wife and I both do shows there. Mine is Caffeine Addiction. Hers is Ordinary Town. And we were given this CD while we were at the Strawberry Music Festival this last week. And it's an excellent CD. And this is Sherry Austin from Santa Cruz.
And the song is?
And it's on this. It's the first cut, I think, is what's going to be done off the CD.
It's Less and Less, I believe.
I try to travel around with less and less. Tried them all, and the simple way is the way that's best. Save lots of time not having to choose what color skirt I wear or which pair of shoes. Don't need my guitar to sing my song. Wherever I land, I'll always get along. I've been up and down the road a time or two, I guess. Now I try to travel around with less than less.
That's Less and Less by Sherry Austin. It's an example of the music on KFOK. Bruce, you've got a lot of folk musicians in the Sierra foothills. Do you often have live performances on the station?
We've had a few. The station really isn't set up to be able to do too much. Mostly what we've had is just interviews with various artists that come through and such. There's actually Tracy Grammer. We've had several... Some of them escape me as of now, but it's usually when there's an interview done, I've got to bring in extra equipment.
How community are community stations, Jeff?
Well, it says right in our mission and our values that we're all about localism. We're about public participation, social equality, diversity, and community media, and media literacy. So our whole mission and our whole aim is to involve the community. And given that the license is owned by a public access television station, our main mission is sort of providing access to the forms of media for the community.
Well, I started out working at a community radio station, and it seemed like it was just a certain cross-section of the community was really involved in the quote-unquote community radio station. What do you do to try and make sure that as many parts of the community are represented on your station?
It's all about outreach, and you can never do enough, and we never do enough, but we do what we can, and as we try to appeal to as many diverse segments that we can in the community and bring in people. If we see something missing, then we try to fill that gap and fill that niche.
Bruce?
Well, ours, of course, when I first set the station up, is of course, it's licensed through the American River Folk Society, which was an existing 501c prior to the station. And the first meeting we had is I said that we have this construction permit. I can build this station, but it is going to be a community station, which I gave a basic explanation of a community station. But I said, you will build it and you will run it. And by doing that, the community then pitched in and built the station, and the community is involved. We are very diverse with the community that we have up there, as well with the broadcasters we have on there. And this is probably what has kept it going more than anything else, is that diversity and the various people in the community who really like having something that is their community station.
Joining us by phone is Pete Tredish, who works with Prometheus. That's a national organization that promotes community radio. Pete, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be on the show.
What does Prometheus do?
Prometheus Radio Project started back in 1998 to advocate with the FCC to allow the creation of more of these 100-watt community radio stations. And about half of what we do is regulatory and advocacy, doing work in Washington and wherever we need to make sure that low power stations have a real shot at the airwaves and are treated fairly by the rules once they're there. And the other half of what we do is we build radio stations with groups that are just starting out and have never operated a radio station before, and we try to bring people together. We have these events that we call radio barn raisings, where we actually build a radio station over the course of the weekend with about 200 volunteers that come who want to learn how to run radio stations and want to learn all the elements that it'll take to actually operate a radio station.
Why do low-power stations need help in Washington?
Well, unfortunately, broadcasting is a business that's been around for quite a while, and so some monopolies have really had an opportunity to establish a real strong influence. And, you know, broadcasting, of course, is a particularly influential political business, more so than making soft drinks or socks or something like that. If you're a broadcaster, you actually have ownership or control of a certain amount of the airwaves, and so politicians tend to be very afraid of them. And one thing that a lot of the broadcasters agree upon is that they don't want anyone else to share the airwaves with them. They don't want to lose their market share to many new voices. So the National Association of Broadcasters and unfortunately NPR at the time both opposed low power radio and wanted to try to stop there from being more low power radio stations on the dial.
What about the FCC? Do you think that the FCC is committed to low power FM?
Well, that really changes with the political winds in Washington. Back in 2000, the FCC was very in favor of low-power FM and very helpful, and there are still certainly some staff at the FCC that are very committed to low-power FM. On the other hand, the FCC currently is headed by Chairman Kevin Martin, who has shown relatively little interest in low-power FM compared to some other issues that he cares about more, like allowing large media corporations to be able to dramatically consolidate their holdings and be able to purchase larger and larger broadcast empires.
In our studio, Jeff Shaw and Bruce Hayden. Jeff and Bruce, tell us, without going into too much detail, what it was like getting permission from the FCC to set up the station, and how are your relations with the FCC today? Is it a hassle, or is there nothing to it? Jeff?
Well, it's like dealing, I guess, with any government institution, and that there's real people working real jobs at that institution, and it's just a matter of dealing with them and not being afraid of sort of all the mounds of paperwork that you have to go through. I felt when getting on the air, it did feel like a chore and a lot of work, and it felt like we were a full power station. It felt like almost as much work as it would take to be a full power, and yet we're not treated as a full power. So I think at this point, it would be nice, given the amount of work and the amount of investment that our community has made in the station, to have the same sort of rights as a full-power station.
Bruce?
Well, I agree exactly what Jeff said. Is we had very little contact, really, initially with the FCC, although they were very late in getting our license to us once we got on the air. And I had to contact them, and I went through a lot of hoops trying to get hold of somebody who could give me that license. Presently, we are also going to be moving our transmitter to a higher location where we can do a little bit better on our coverage for the local area. And we haven't, we are in the process, which we've had initially some contact with them, but as soon as we get the tower that was supposed to be built by the local public utility district where we are going to be on, then we'll be contacting them again.
Pete, does the FCC grant many low-power FM licenses?
Well, there's two biggest issues that face the FCC right now in terms of low power. Which I think Jeff alluded to a little bit, is that low-power stations are what are called secondary, whereas full-power stations are primary. And any time that a primary station or a full-power station wants the channel of a low-power FM, all they have to do is ask the FCC, and the low-power FM has to get out of the way and might even be forced to completely shut down. And so in that way, we're sort of the second-class citizens of the airwaves, and that's something that we really want the FCC to change. The other thing, a little more directly to your question, is that the FCC has a pretty limited number of low-power FM opportunities that they're willing to offer, and they've actually further limited it recently by giving away many thousands of potential channels that low-power FMs could have used to a small number of broadcast networks, particularly one out of Twin Falls, Idaho, called Radio Assist Ministry. And, they applied for 2,500 radio licenses across the country in pretty much the same channels that Low Power FMs could have used. And they've been granting quite a few of those. And we really think that it's you know, it's not fair to a community to say you can't even have one license, but some group in Twin Falls, Idaho can have 2,500. So that, those are sort of the two biggest things that we face with the FCC today, is trying to make sure that there are more opportunities for the future, and also that the stations that we already have built are secure against being taken by full power operators.
Now, Pete, a little while ago you mentioned that your organization, Prometheus, does so-called barn raisings, and one of those that you did was with KRBS in Oroville, right?
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
Well, joining us on the phone from Oroville is Marianne Norzer, who's station manager of KRBS. It's a low-power station there. Marianne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
Tell us what we hear on KRBS. What kind of programs?
Well, the majority of it is local programming. It runs the gamut. From gardening shows to Hmong language programmings to a women's show, getting women's and kids' voices out there as much as possible, and a lot of independent media, independent news.
Are there many commercial radio stations in Oroville?
There are two radio stations that have an Oroville location on their applications. One of them produces brings in ESPN. And one of them is a Spanish language station.
So there's a big gap in Oroville for what you do, I guess.
There is a huge gap, not just within the radio, but with the newspapers. All three of our dailies within Butte County are owned by one media group.
So you do local news?
Unfortunately, that is one of the biggest expenses that it's out there. And we haven't been able to create actual local news, but we do have local people that do political shows. But creating that local news is a huge expense.
Tell us about the barn raising at KRBS. What did it take to get going?
That was amazing. That was an amazing thing. And I am very lucky to have attended the last one, their 10th one, that Pete put on up in Oregon. That was wonderful. But the one we had here, it included workshops and hundreds of people from all over the West Coast coming in to help build it. Everybody from our area that was going to be involved with KRBS, the majority of them knew nothing about radio. So to have Prometheus come in and put up the radio station, help us with the equipment and all of that, and teach all of our local people about radio was, in my mind, the best way for us to come on.
Pete, do you have a network of people who travel to these barn raisings?
We do. There are a lot of people. Once people come to one or two of them, they tend to get really hooked. One of the reasons is that most engineers spend most of their time like just working in isolation, or often radio producers. They spend many hours cutting together their radio pieces, and they just don't get to talk to very many people that do the same thing. And so what we've tapped into, I think, is that there is an enormously generous spirit among people with technical skills, and no place to put it in the current commercial context, because the commercial context is so competitive and about hoarding knowledge and hoarding skills and trying to get an advantage over others, whereas a lot of these people really, they want to spend more time sort of sharing these ideas and sharing what they've learned over the years. So I'd say there are, any place that we build a radio station in the United States, we can count on 100, 150 people to come out that either want to learn or want to teach, or probably some of both, and to generate stronger community radio stations.
That's Pete Tredish of Prometheus, a national organization that promotes community radio. Also on the phone, Marianne Norzer, station manager of KRBS in Oroville. In our studio, Jeff Shaw of KDRT in Davis and Bruce Hayden of KFOK in Georgetown. I'd like to ask the station heads about how you build an audience, because often in eclectic stations, the program changes fundamentally every 2 hours, and there are some people who just love to listen to that kind of stuff, but a lot of people tend to favor one kind of music or one kind of talk programming. Is it hard to keep an audience when your programming changes all the time, and does that matter? Let's start with Jeff Shaw.
I think in reality it does matter, and we do try to sort of program the station to make it interesting for the listener. We tend to focus on getting people through the door and training them and the programs they produce, and not always the audience, but we do program our station according to what shows are on other stations and trying to fit that niche so that we don't air the same shows at the same time if they're an independent news show, say, for instance.
Marianne, does KRBS actively manage the programming?
Yeah, and it is a hard thing. When we first came on the air, people talked about that. They said, well, how are we supposed to know what the heck's on? You guys, every hour it's something new. But it's all in how you market it, and we market it as that. You're right. If you don't like what's on at one, tune back in at two. There'll be something different. Getting out the program schedules was very important, just like getting out a TV guide. Got to let them know what's going on.
And Bruce, you have a background in folk music, and the organization that created KFOK is basically a folk music organization. How important is it to have folk music on KFOK?
Well, I think it's, of course, it's very important because you don't hear it really, with exception of a few places. An example is I also am on the board of directors for the Far West Folk Alliance, and we're putting together a DJ reception. And when I talked to the people in Southern California and said we ought to have a DJ reception, there's only 8 broadcasters that do folk music south of Bakersfield. We have a wealth of that up in Northern California, and it is very important because I notice that it reflects of the attendance at various live shows of how we do it. But we do more than just folk music, and the programming is done by a programming committee, and Marion Smith, who is our program director, is responsible for that, a very dynamic person who's putting together a great deal of shows and a lot of interview stuff that's coming up. And they are rearranging a lot of things as they go, and the same as what Jeff is talking about, to increase the audience as far as the participation and listenership and also in the station itself.
Each of you, how do you pay the bills? Is it membership? Is it underwriting? Is it grants or whatever? Let's start with Marianne at KRBS.
We do underwriting. That has someone, you need someone to work it for that. We also have small grants, and mostly it's listener supported.
And do you have many paid staff?
There's no paid staff.
No paid staff. Okay. Bruce?
We have no paid staff. Fortunately for the American River Folk Society, we had been doing concerts. My wife and I booked the concerts and publicized the concerts, and they have brought in a substantial amount of money on that. Being involved in the actual performance world with folk, it helps a great deal. And plus the fact is we have another individual who books some of the concerts as well, and he's president of the Sierra Blues Society. So we have the mix that we come in with this, and it probably raised more money. In fact, we have raised more money with the concerts than almost any other endeavor. Otherwise, it's underwriting, pretty much.
So if you were in the for-profit world, you'd call it synergy, probably, the concerts.
Definitely, because okay. We also have a for-profit series that my wife and I do, too.
And Jeff?
We do underwriting, and we do membership drives yearly. And this is the first year we've budgeted some paid staff, and we'll see how it goes.
And we'll wrap this segment up with Pete at Prometheus. Pete, what does it look like in general, nationally, financially, for small stations?
Well, the low-power stations certainly have not gotten the kind of recognition that larger public radio stations have gotten from Corporation for Public Broadcasting or other sources. And so almost all of them fundraise in more or less the same way that's been described by these stations. But I think it is important to realize that for these stations, while audience is very important, the audience numbers may not be the most important reason why people are going and doing this. Because, I mean, if you just look at the audience numbers, the most important programming there is in America is something like Howard Stern. But obviously, you know, that doesn't do the most for society. And so if I have 100,000 people listening to Howard Stern versus 100 people listening to a city council meeting in Oroville, California, you know, I think it actually does people a lot more good. You know, it's very important that that's out there. And so I think that a lot of times the stations are sustained not so much just by money, but a lot by people's sense of civic engagement and by people's interest in putting forward a robust and strong political debate, and also giving voice to lots of performers and other cultural people that otherwise would not really make it into the commercial media, but they have found a voice on low power FM.
Well, thank you, all of you. Pete Tredish on the phone from Prometheus and Marianne Norzer of KRBS in Oroville. And in our studio, Jeff Shaw of KDRT in Davis and Bruce Hayden of KFOK. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And links to all stations and Prometheus on our webpage, capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, public access radio on cable and a local radio personality who got started at that station. We'll be right back. This is Jeffrey Callison. We're listening again to a recent insight showcasing the variety of small radio stations in Northern California. It first aired early last month. Coming up, Douglas Everett of KDVS and occasionally of Insight, and the head of radio at Sacramento's public access cable station. Earlier in the show, we looked at pirate radio and licensed low-power stations. Now, public access radio on cable. Access Sacramento programs a radio station, along with its two cable TV channels. The radio service is called The Voice. You can hear it on the internet and via cable in Sacramento County. The man who runs The Voice is Shane Carpenter, radio coordinator at Access Sacramento. Shane, welcome to Insight.
It's certainly a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
How can you listen to radio via the cable?
Well, it's a challenge to be sure, and that's our primary method. You basically what you do is you hook up your cable to your radio and use the cable as an antenna. You might need a splitter so that you can still watch cable TV programming, but that's basically how it works. And it's a little bit daunting, and that's why we have so many other outlets that we use as well.
Who gets to be on The Voice?
Basically, anybody can be on The Voice, provided they are a County of Sacramento resident.
And do you have a programming philosophy, or is the programming completely determined by the people who are on the radio?
Well, I think we have a philosophy of openness and dialogue. And, of course, Access Sacramento has, its own mission statement. But generally what we like to do is provide the opportunity for local residents to make their own programs.
And what kind of programs are they doing?
Well, there's programming from, various types of music programming. We're starting to get a lot more socially responsible political broadcasting, and that's what I like to see, because I think our station has a duty, like all community stations do, to give back to the community. And so we're having a lot of talk shows, and it's generally it's growing. It changes every time, too. So,
is it 24 hours a day?
Yes, we are indeed. We have been 24/7 for a number of years, probably about 18 or 19 years now. So,
Shane Carpenter at The Voice, which is part of Access Sacramento. In our studio is a man who, I guess, got a start at The Voice. It's Douglas Everett. He's the host of Radio Parallax on KDVS in Davis, one of the few stations we haven't got to in this hour. He's also a fill-in host of Insight. And, hey, Doug, good to see you again.
Jeffrey, thanks for having me.
How do you know when you're doing a show on a station like The Voice that that anyone is listening? And even if not many people are listening, does it matter?
Well, when we started over at The Voice, which we started with a phone call from a friend of mine 6 years ago saying, let's do a radio show, which I thought was a great idea. But how do you do that? Well, we went down to Public Access TV where Shane then trained us how to go about doing this. And We never had any idea how many people were listening, because it's obviously not a terribly powerful platform. But, I did get feedback from people that would say, I heard your show and liked it or whatever. And that was, you knew you were getting out there.
And that was a similar show to the one you do on KDVS. Is that right?
I would say yes, that the current show we do, Radio Parallax, did evolve out of the show we did on Access. And We pre-produced all of the programs, and,
yes,
and we got a lot of chance to do that up to 2 hours at a time, and it was just really good training to do what we do.
Shane, you were in a training session just up until about 2:30, right?
Yes, indeed. I also am a vocational instructor. I teach ROP radio production. This is my eighth year of that, and I started at Sacramento High School, and then I currently teach at the Visual and Performing Arts Charter School at the Army Depot. And so I teach students ranging in age from, 14, 15, 16, all the way up through the end of high school.
What do you teach your students? Do they get bare bones radio training, or do you go into detail?
Well, we have a year-long course of instruction, and we start out with the basics. And even though, you know, my first love is non-commercial radio, we are training the students to, have job skills and to be placed in the commercial industry. So we're teaching the full range of coursework, all the way from engineering through station administration.
Do you remember Douglas Everett when he took your training?
I sure do, and I'm happy always to speak with him, and it's always good to hear good things.
Shane, you've been working in radio for many years now. Does it ever get frustrating to be working with absolute beginners who you ultimately don't have a lot of control over?
Absolutely not, because what happens, it's like a farmer. People come into the studio and they have their ideas, and if there's anything, you kind of, over the years, you kind of get a sense of what it's going to take to help these people accomplish what they need. But it really is. It's invigorating, and it's very time-consuming, and it's hard on me. But when I finish with the end of each class, it's like I'm raring to go again, because I see, you know, these folks go out and they start producing, and they're doing quality work. And that's the same feeling I get in any teaching endeavor that I do.
Doug, when you started out and you suspected you were not broadcasting to a large number of people, how do you keep yourself motivated to do your best and keep growing?
Well, we knew in the beginning we had to learn how to do it. So we figured sometimes you think if nobody's listening, maybe that's a good thing. You know, you asked about who's listening and how do you know? And these days, with someone like at KDIRT, they can be broadcasting on the web and Sacramento Access. You can go all over the world on the internet. We asked on our show a couple days ago, you know, what do you like? We figured we want to get some feedback and see what would come back. And if I could just read a surprising response I got, which was as follows, asking, well, what do you like, what do you don't like? Douglas, I've been an avid listener of your show via podcast for about a year. I listen whilst commuting on the Greater Manchester Metrolink tram system into the city from the suburbs in Manchester, UK. On last week's show, you asked if anything about it should be changed. My answer is definitely not. I love the content, especially the interviews, even though I have no idea who most of the interviewees are. The humor is great, as are the politics. It's good to hear that not all Americans agree with the stance of your current government. John H., Manchester, UK.
That's cool.
I was so blown away to think that this guy on a train in Manchester is podcasting what we're doing at KDVS. But that's the reality of the world today.
Excellent. Shane, I know that Access Sacramento has had its budget cut for a variety of reasons. How's The Voice doing? Is it threatened in any way?
Well, you know, we're always, it seems throughout the course of our 20-year existence, we're always looking over our shoulder. But if anything, The Voice is growing. And I graduate between 2 and 4 new people each month, and I think Douglas hit it right on the head. The real future for stations like ours, if we're not LPFM, is over the internet. And we're getting a lot of new activity because of the internet, and it's a lot more stable. And for us, it's a lot easier for people to hear the station.
Why doesn't Access Sacramento have an LPFM?
Well, actually, we were among 10 radio stations that applied in 2000, along with everybody else. But some folks say it's a 5-day window, but it actually was a 3-day window. I know because I missed it. I was involved at that same time in the breakup of Sacramento High School. And, I was the actual writer of the application. And so there were too many things going on, and we missed the window.
We're just about out of time, but I'm going to ask you both, what would things be like if it were not for small stations like Low Power FM, Pirate, and Access Cable Radio? Doug?
Well, I think that it would be a less rich environment out there in the radio world. Over at KDVS, they're broadcasting things like industrial music, rap music, things I don't care about particularly, but they'll have 60s music, surf music, blues music, and you get things that are so out there that it is a weakness, as you mentioned before, of people expecting a consistency, but it's such a strength, and you get something that's really, really different.
Shane?
Yes, indeed. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's all about diversity. That's the whole thing. And these stations, without these radio stations, I think the public would suffer, and they wouldn't really know what they've missed until it's not there anymore.
Well, thank you both. Shane Carpenter on the phone, radio coordinator at The Voice. That's the public access cable radio station operated by Access Sacramento. And in our studio, Douglas Everett of Radio Parallax on KDVS and fill-in host of Insight. Thanks both.
Thank you, Jeff.
And there are links to pretty much everything you've heard on the show at capradio.org/insight. And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Today's associate producers were Natalie Breen and Rob Whitlock. Insight staff includes technical director Mark Jones, the very hardworking assistant producer Jen Picard, and senior producer Benjamin Jonas Keeling. Thank you for joining us. There's no Major League Baseball team in Sacramento, but it's still a baseball town. Next time in Insight, the long history of baseball in California's capital. It's the subject of a new documentary on KVIE. You'll hear archive play-by-play from a Sacramento Solons game and fans, experts, and former players. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
That's Monday afternoon at 2 on the KXJZ stations.